We all need energy, and no, I'm not talking about the short-lived jolt provided by those little plastic bottles that line the grocery store checkout lanes. I'm talking about the stuff that heats, cools, and lights our homes, cooks our meals, and conveys informative and occasionally entertaining programs like the one you're watching. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and on this edition of Indiana Lawmakers, we'll look at the state's ongoing transition from coal to natural gas to renewables. Indiana Lawmakers, from the State House to your house.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoverypark district.com.
Ever since it was discovered along the banks of the Wabash River in 1736, coal has been, for the most part, Indiana's go-to source of energy. The U.S. Energy Information Administration reports that even though our state's mining operations have shrunk dramatically over the years, we continue to rely heavily on coal, with our annual consumption second only to that of Texas. However, with wind turbines, solar farms, ethanol plants, and anaerobic digesters popping up across the state, change is, quite literally, in the air. Should Hoosier lawmakers seek to steer the transformation or allow it to unfold without government intrusion? Here to weigh in on the issue are Republican Representative Ed Soliday of Valparaiso, Assistant Majority Floor Leader and Chairman of the House Committee on Utilities, Energy, and Telecommunications, Democratic Representative Matt Pierce of Bloomington, the ranking minority member of that committee, and Bruce Stevens, President of the Indiana Coal Council, a trade association representing coal producers, coal reserve holders, and other entities associated with the state's coal industry. I thank you all for being here. I promised in the open we're going to have a high energy discussion, so I want, okay. That just doomed it right there. Sorry. But I'll try to avoid those in the rest of the show. Bruce, tell us, is this Indiana, in your mind, is it a coal state still?
Oh, absolutely.
Give us your elevator pitch on why it is.
Well, there have been a significant decrease in the number of coal companies that are in operation in Indiana over the years. If you go back 30 years, there were probably 40 coal companies. There were 80 coal mines today. There's a handful of companies, four or five. There's 15 mines. Our production is about half underground technologies and half surface technologies, but our production really is only about 15% less than what it is on a typical year. The reason thereof has been some refuelings to other forms of energy, as well as some plants that were aged and shut down as a result of environmental regulation.
So as long as we're talking statistics, I mentioned that we're number two in terms of consumption. I believe we've dropped to number eight in terms of our mining capacity, or our generation of our production, I should say, of coal.
Through this past month, we're actually number six right now. Yeah.
Moving up, I guess that's the comeback of coal that we've heard so much about, Matt Pierce. Is it? Did we write it off prematurely?
Well, I think that the utilities who are, you know, looking at all the different forms of generation out there, they've made a decision that just on economics, it's time to move to other forms of generation. And I think that's the problem the coal industry is facing. I mean, yeah, the external costs of coal are kind of coming home with a lot of the pollution regulations that have come online. But it's really just the fact that fracking has made natural gas so cheap and available that it has the other advantage that it releases 50% less carbon when it's burned. So I think those factors are kind of what's really causing coal to decline. And then, of course, renewables are coming on pretty strong, both wind and solar.
So if you look, you talked about the investor-owned utilities already sort of perhaps moving away, even before this discussion ever came up to a certain extent. I think you have Indianapolis Power maybe looking at closing two of its four coal-burning plants, and then NIPSCO up in the northern part of the state, I think four out of five over the coming years. So that was certainly the pattern that seemed to be holding sway within that sector of the economy. Which brings us to your bill, sure. House Bill 1414, which basically says, all right, we may be a coal state, whether we're number eight, number six, maybe there are plans to close it. It's all immaterial because we're just going to kind of, you'd like to see things be stay the way they are, at least in the short term.
Well, I think you can't really discuss 1414 unless you look at it in the context of the task force. As Representative Pierce says, the industry, the world is changing very, very rapidly. There are folks who say, well, you're trying to save coal, and I don't think you can save it. Just the economics. When I came in the legislature, when Representative Pierce had been here a few years, I think natural gas was $12, $14 a therm. Today it's like $2. So just the economics, it doesn't work. But all of us are concerned about the environment. And renewables are heavily subsidized, but those subsidies are starting to go away. Those are phasing out. But we're looking at all of that change, and there is a myth out there that there's something like a free market in energy. There is not. There's nothing that even looks like a free market in Indiana. Each of the five major electric companies are monopolies.
And that is the historical pattern across the country.
There have been some deregulations on the generation side, but you're not going to deregulate probably transmission and distribution because we'd have wires so you couldn't even see the sun. So generally that has been the pattern. And the way it works is that in most states there is a regulatory agency. Here it's the Indiana Utility Regulatory Commission. And they serve as the competition for those utilities. And they generally...
This is when people hear about rate hearings. That's when the utility comes forth with its proposal, and the members of the IRUC say, maybe a little too much, maybe not enough.
Exactly. And if you talk to the IURC, talk to any member, they will say to you, we just enforce the laws the legislature passes. I mean, the law is about that thick. Matt passed most of it. I, being a good Republican, don't pass a lot of laws. But we created a task force because MISO, the stock market of electrons for the Midwest, IURC, state chamber were saying we need an energy policy. And so we created a task force, a lot of good people on it, very educated people from various disciplines.
And you make a very good point about bringing that up as the backdrop. That was something the governor had proposed. That's something right. that the General Assembly endorsed and, in fact, created, and you are co-chair of that august body.
And so we had asked the utilities to slow down because we have very wide range of philosophies within the utilities. We have NIPSCO, which is, they're not closing four, they're closing all of their coal-fired plants. And if they follow through on their 20-year plan, they will be what's known as a TDR, a transmission, distribution, and retail entity, and will buy all of their electrons. If you look at those plans for the five companies, they all say they're going to buy in the 2030s. Well, who are they going to buy from? MISO's asking that question, so forth and so on. So we said, let's come together. And
we are going to get these. We have a panel. We'll let everybody up. This is good. By the time you're done, there won't be any closures because we'll still be sitting here at the table.
So let's reason together. 1414 is basically there to say, keep your promises. It doesn't stop them from doing anything. It certainly doesn't stop. There isn't a plant planned to close before 2023. That bill sunsets at the end of May 2021 or at the beginning of May 2021.
All right. I could ask a question about then why is it necessary, but we'll yield the floor to some of the other folks here. What's wrong with the idea of just having this sort of deep breath, if you will?
Well, I just don't think it's needed, and I think the bill's really doing more about it. I think it is a bailout bill, and, you know, it has the one portion up front that requires all these advanced notifications, the IORC, and public hearings, and a lot of bureaucracy for the IORC just to kind of then give its opinion about what it thinks about closing down a coal plant.
Because it's not as strict as it was, we should point out. No, at the beginning of the session, it basically, the hoop through which utilities that wanted to close a coal burning plant, the hoop was more narrow than what it is now. Now it's it's basically an airing of shine a light on what they want to do.
But there's another giveaway provision in the bill for the coal industry that would essentially allow utilities to go out and buy up to 90 days of coal supply. Right now they do about 45 days on average, and it would allow the cost of buying that coal to be passed on directly to the ratepayer through this thing called a fuel cost adjustment. And so to me, that's just clearly rewarding money to the coal industry for to buy extra amount of coal that I don't think is even really necessary for the utility to have. And so The other thing that's interesting to me about that is one of the arguments that people who support coal say is that it's more reliable because the coal pile's right at the plant. And if you have to burn a lot of, you know, energy in a cold snap or something, you got all right there. Well, this bill allows the coal to be stored somewhere else, not at the generation facility. And I guess they claim you have to get it there within 2 days. But so it seems to me things are working at cross purposes there. I don't know why we need to have this kind of extra money in the pocket of the coal industry provision in that bill.
Why do you need a extra money in the pocket of the coal industry provision? I should point out that when this was in committee, it's moved out of the House, obviously. I think it was 52-41 was the vote. Of course, it's we'll see what the Senate does. But I think about 30 people spoke in opposition during the committee hearing. A handful of people, four of whom I believe were affiliated in some manner with your group. Why are they so passionate on the part of the coal council about this bill if it's not a coal bailout?
Well, we don't see it as a coal bailout bill. We believe this is good public policy and that there have been billions of dollars in state-of-the-art emission controls put into the coal plants over the past 20 years. And to retire a coal plant that is functioning very well and then build something new actually straps the ratepayers twice.
But if the generators of the electricity say, I presume they have some expertise in this area, say it's cost effective for us to phase this out and move to natural gas, to solar, to wind, to...
With respect to natural gas, we don't believe that the low prices, at record low prices, that those are sustainable into the future. We're already seeing a decrease in the number of rigs that are out drilling to produce natural gas. The natural gas companies have got to start making money. The projections are that it will increase again, and coal will again be competitive. What we don't want to do is lose those baseload plants that run off of an Indiana resource rather than build new plants that then send our money to other states. The other thing is, as both representatives have mentioned, renewables certainly are coming on more and more. There are transmission problems with that, but sooner or later someone's going to solve that. There may be someone at Rose Hulman or Purdue that comes up with something that's not even a windmill or a solar panel. But if there's going to be a transition to renewables, we believe it's better for it to be that the coal plants be maintained during that interim rather than having huge amounts of money put on the backs of the ratepayers.
The important thing to know is these integrated resource plans that the utilities have to come up with under the law is a very open and long process, and all the stakeholders, including the coal industry, can comment on those plans and say, well, your assumption about this is wrong, or you're discounting that, and the IURC ultimately comments on them as well. And so there's an opportunity for people to do kind of fact-checking and assumption-checking and that kind of thing. And throughout that process, the utilities have said, literally, they can save ratepayers hundreds of millions of dollars collectively by transitioning away from coal and into these other forms of energy.
And you're saying in the absence of any state oversight because of the federal regulatory structure, that's already in place.
That was another point I made on the House floor. You got this thing called the FERC, a federal agency that looks at reliability. Then they oversee another thing called NERC, which is interested in reliability.
We won't delve into NERC.
There's a huge alphabet soup of people who look at that. And then even MISO, if somebody comes in and says, I'm going to take some generation offline, MISO has the ability under this thing called a tariff, basically like a contract they have, to say, hey, wait a minute, we think that's going to cause us a problem with not having enough capacity, and they have a process to kind of keep that facility open.
All right, let's go back to the task force, because I mean, we're going to stick with coal, but I want to back up for 1 second. One of the reasons you need a task force, I guess, is that right now it's sort of the Wild West, right? So some counties and municipalities allow wind turbines, some don't, right?
Right.
The state at various times has either given an incentive for people to buy hybrid cars, electric cars, or more recently has punished them for doing that. Not punished them, but arguably
pay their fair share.
They pay their fair share. You look at all these different things, homeowners associations, can they say how big a solar panel can be and what it looks like?
Sure.
This is, correct me if I'm wrong, but your task force is charged with looking at all of this, correct?
Well, actually, not the distribution part. We're transmission and generation. Distribution is whether they're going to have solar panels, and most of that, you can do solar panels wherever you like. It's whether what you get paid when
you
feed
back to the grid. We keep hearing about a comprehensive energy plan. Right. Can we really have a comprehensive energy plan if we still don't know who can put up a wind turbine and who can't? And
Well, that is an issue that Representative Pierce and I will get to wrestle with. I actually have a bill. We chose to hold it and put it in the task force because that's where we want this to be hashed through. But we have 32 counties banning windmills. In fact, one, they're called PPAs, purchase power agreements.
MISO, PPAs, NERC, FERC.
It's like NASA here.
Yeah, are pretty geeky on
they
this.
They got their approval. Somebody's got to be it, you know. It's Matt and I. So they got their approval, a big wind approval. And 2 weeks after they got the approval, a county that'll go unnamed said, not in our county. So that company is one of the largest windmill companies in the country, and they said, no more in Indiana. We put $15 million in the study. We've lost it. We're done until you straighten this out. So between us, hopefully we can do it in a bipartisan way. We find a way that the locals can have some control, but we can make investment in renewables
here. Because that does seem to be part of the equation. Would you agree that to have a comprehensive plan, you really kind of needs to be comprehensive?
I did think the Representative Soliday and I might have a little difference of opinion about how holistically you have to look at all this stuff. Because you could just focus in on generation and this issue of where you're going to get the energy you need to meet the demand of the future. You could just focus in on that, and that's a big piece of the pie. But I just think that you have to understand how distributed energy fits into the picture, where it's likely to go. I think you also have to go back and look at some of the policies from the past, because quite honestly, I think my Republican friends who've controlled the legislature now for the last decade have not made the best decisions when it comes to energy efficiency, net metering. There's a whole host of things that I think would make sense to go back and look at and say, in light of today's kind of technological developments, what policies should we have in that relationship? Because just for example, if you have a good, robust energy efficiency program and you can reduce the demand, that impacts then what you need to do on the generation side. So it makes sense to look at all that stuff together, in my opinion.
Let me ask you, I'm going to real quick. In 20 years, will Indiana still be using coal? And is that a good thing or a bad thing? Do you want to do away with coal, fundamentally?
I think that economically and environmentally, it makes sense to go to other forms of energy.
Okay, and Bruce, you agree that, obviously you don't want to do away with coal, but you think coal is here for the long haul. Even if in this sort of nirvana future where everybody has a windmill and everybody has a solar panel and the ocean has risen to the point that we actually can collect energy from the borders of Indiana, which are now oceanfront property, you're still thinking we will have coal?
Yes, I do. I think there's going to be a need for baseload power. And yes, the utilities look out 20 years. One of them looked out 30 years. And the savings oftentimes does not start until year 25. So yeah, coal is going to be there in the future. And from an environmental perspective, Indiana's coal fleet is 0.1% of global carbon emissions. To put it into more perspective, China burns 5 billion tons of coal a year. India's just behind them. The United States burns 300 to 400 million. If you wiped Indiana off of the map, the difference would be 0.05 of a degree by the year 2100. So you have to look at what the environmental gain is versus the economic pain.
Well, and it's solid. It comes out of an industry that many say is a contributor, the aviation industry, commercial aviation, but to carbon.
So is the beef industry.
So is the beef. All right. Well, everybody is, I guess. And I'm full of hot air myself, so I guess I'm contributing.
Sure.
I want your answer on coal. You've talked about this being a bridge. Does that suggest that you and your colleagues on this task force look to the future? What role does coal play? I mean, do you want to get rid of coal?
I think eventually the marketplace takes care of it. Whether it's, you've teased me about my rabbits on a treadmill. The issue
which was a great line. You said the issue is not about coal specifically, whether it's coal or rabbits on a treadmill. That's one of my nominees.
I'm agnostic on that topic. There are five big issues, big variables in energy. There is reliability. We want the lights to come on, we flip the switch. There's stability. Our industries want more and more stable power, but they want more and more renewable, and renewable is less stable, and so forth. So you have to get them on the grid together. There's environment, there is cost, and there is resilience. That's restoring power after an off-nominal event. So if you take any one of those and single it out, you affect all the others. So that's what the task force is about. How do we find the right balance and the right transition? My personal belief is there is an end life for coal. But how do we manage the transition so we don't wind up with rolling brownouts and those kinds of things? How do we get to a policy that manages that transition period? Now, the longest one out that I know of, one utility, I think is 2046 or 2043, the last coal phases out. Up where I live, the last one's out in 2028. But up until that date, you need coal if they hold to their plans.
What concerns you most about this moratorium or whatever you want to call it? Is it the environmental factor? Is it the government philosophical issue here that government is not letting the market work its way? Or is it... I don't know. I don't want to speak for you. What's the beef?
My concern is it's the beginning of a rearguard action to try to protect one particular energy supplier, and that's the coal industry. And I think that
we do,
you know,
as a state, favor certain industries that traditionally is that just inherently
bad?
Well,
yeah, clearly we favor coal, and the energy policy has been completely pro-coal in Indiana for the last decades. So there's no doubt about that. But, you know, my argument is whether you have a task force that's forward-looking and is really looking at how do we transition these newer forms of energy, or does it end up being a vehicle in which to protect some incumbent providers of energy that are in the marketplace right now. That's my big concern, because sunset dates can go away. Once you establish a precedent of all this extra bureaucracy,
May 2021 is not going to really be May 2021.
Whether it's in a conference committee or next year's session, I mean, things can go away.
It's become standard operating
procedure. Once you've established this kind of holding pattern, it's easy to say, okay, now we have a more permanent kind of bureaucratic process for this. And that's my concern. I just think it's taking us off in a direction that's not good.
Bruce Stevens, can the industry, does it need this support? I mean, whether it's through May of 2021 or long term, can the industry stand on its own in terms of its sheer economics of this?
What this bill does is, if a utility has announced a coal retirement in their integrated resource plan, which many, many of them have, then they're fine. If they have not and they decide to retire in the next 15 months, then they have to go before the IURC and say, here's our economic analysis. What do you think of this?
Couldn't
and
this
give
actually
others
hasten people to, I mean, in an odd way, sort of hasten the demise if you're trying to get in under the wire,
We don't know, but I'll say this. No one has a crystal ball what's going to happen in 20 years. No one has a crystal ball what's going to happen this coming November. There are candidates out there who on day one would like to end hydraulic fracking, and if that happens, the price of natural gas is going to skyrocket. You want to have those coal plants there to continue providing affordable electricity.
The argument being that wind and solar and biomass, at least in the state of Indiana, since we don't have an ocean at this point, we don't have any rushing rivers and Hoover-sized dams. Can we get away just with what you would see as clean renewables, or is that a pipe dream?
I think you can get there, but it's a transition process, and it's going to take a while. And the thing is that, people talk about renewables being intermittent, and renewables are what they call schedulable. You can now use weather forecasts and things, and you have a really good sense of when you're going to be generating from wind turbines in the Midwest, when you're going to get good solar production, and MISO's gotten very good at integrating that into the system. Now, it's true that as you scale up the more renewable, then you have some other issues you have to look at, and that's where everybody's standing by for the big breakthrough in storage, right? And some utilities are going ahead and just using current technology to build some pretty big battery facilities, basically. But once you can master storage, then it's a total game changer. So to me, I feel like the energy industry is kind of where the internet was about 1998 or something, where people were using dial-up mostly. They were amazed that you could do email and visit all these fabulous spaces online, but nobody really thought they'd be watching Netflix streaming a 4K picture into their house because the technology advanced. And so I think that we need to be looking forward to how do we get as quickly as possible to kind of the broadband era of energy and get out of the dial-up era of energy.
We shouldn't reveal that you're a ham radio enthusiast, right? That's sort of a, I guess I just did.
You just did.
Do you know where the task force is going to, you're the co-chair, you're going to steer it. Why don't you just save us all trouble here and tell us what you're going to come up with here
and
cut through the suspense.
Again, a lot of bright people, and on both sides of the political spectrum, and what we're trying to do is stay focused on what people asked for, and that was a policy. So one of the things we're exploring, in fact, I'm meeting with a group of PhDs this afternoon, we're looking at something that may look like an energy quality index that says, where are we today in those five items, and let's not get worse. So there's plenty of room for innovation. I jokingly say I'm working on cold fusion in the basement, and that will revolutionize. There are probably things in the energy world that we haven't even thought of that are going to emerge. You've got to have room in a policy for all of that to happen. But in the interim, the lights have to come on when we throw the switch. So if we can, I've done this, I served some time at the National Academy of Sciences on the Aeronautics Space Engineering Board. We've done these kind of things there before, where we take those five variables, break them down into their drivers, rate them on what do we value, and come up with a number. Hopefully we can get there. MISO is doing the same thing, only from marketability. In talking with them, we're planning to try to put something together that's a hybrid.
All right, we've got to wrap this up, but one thing it seems that everybody does agree on, and the bill was changed through the first few weeks or months of the session, is some help for dislodged, displaced miners and coal industry. And how important is that to your constituency, Bruce?
Well, the first thing that I want to point out is Indiana.
Do it fairly quickly.
Okay, very quickly. Coal miners are some of the most technically competent individuals that you will find. They have specialized training in a variety of areas. It's just that training doesn't necessarily correlate to other industries. So there have been a lot of displaced miners. There have been several coal plants that have shut down as well and affected those employees. I believe that anything that is helpful to a displaced worker is well done.
And that I think everybody can agree on. All right, we have agreement. Now we'll just work back from there. Thank you all. Obviously an important issue, one that there's not great agreement on, but you've helped at least illuminate what's at stake here for Hoosiers. Again, my guests have been Republican Representative Ed Soliday of Valparaiso, Democratic Representative Matt Pierce of Bloomington, and Bruce Stevens, President of the Indiana Coal Council. If you're a 12-year-old, should you be tried as an adult and serve time as an adult? The verdict is in on the next Indiana Lawmakers. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. And remember, you can get our show on demand from Xfinity. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.
Purdue Research Foundation's $1 billion Discovery Park District, where the Convergence Center is merging companies, investors, and entrepreneurs with Purdue innovators to address global challenges and advance life-changing technologies. More at discoverypark district.com.